beloved and holy and only child of our Heavenly Father, child of the one source, child of light, divine. That is who you are. Take it deeply within the consciousness and contemplate what that means. Child of the one source, child of light, divine. I am the one known as Jeshua ben Joseph. Jesus, you have called me. And it is in great joy that I come to abide with you this evening in your timing, as you have chosen to call me forth. Great joy whenever we have the opportunity to speak in the tones. Great joy when we have the opportunity to speak with the vibrations of the heart. Always and truly, I am with you. There is no place that you can go that I am not. There is no separation. There is no separation. So in any time when you want to call upon me, instantly, I am there. Any time you want to know my presence and my love, call upon me. And instantly, I am there. Whenever you want a helping hand, whenever you want a loving heart, call upon me, and I am there. This evening, I have been asked to share with you my process of coming to know my oneness, to know my Godhood, to know the love, the infinite love, that is forever you and me. I was fortunate enough to make my entrance in the lifetime that is so famous into a family that already was open and aware of spirituality. My mother, Mary, you will hear from her probably later this week, was a very spiritually open woman who knew lifetimes as an Essene. The community into which I was born was the Essene community, which was very open to knowing the spirit behind all physicality. My father was Joseph, who was a most wondrous carpenter, loved the vibration. You will hear from him later this week because he very much looks forward to the time when he can be amongst you and amongst the wood. But we will save that for another night. My father was very much in tune with all of the vibrations of spirit and the reality that seems to be more dense, and yet he knew the spiritual basis for the physicality. He knew this through the wood, the vibration of the wood that would speak to him and will speak to you as you will be open to it. That which you are sitting upon, some of it is the inspiration of your brothers and sisters, in that they have manufactured something that perhaps looks like wood. And then there is wood surrounding. So you have the vibration of life. Now wood, well, I'm getting into my father's message, but he will give it to you again. The tree never dies. This wood has been, as you see, polished by many hands. Much loving tenderness of moving, but it is always spiritual. It is always alive in a different form, perhaps, but always alive. Does the tree mourn when it is cut down? In truth, it does not, because it knows itself to be alive, to be still vibrant, and looks forward the same as you do. When you release the body, the form that you have, and you wonder what new chapter is going to be happening. The tree is the same, it lives. In truth, there is no death. Take that deeply within. There is change, yes. And that is why when you have the recycling, I'm not going to call it a fad because it is definitely something that is very useful. But you have the recycling now that you do so that things can be used over and over or remade over. But the vibration is still there. The life vibration. You would say, well, this is dead wood. I have heard that said many times. When you see the tree that has been cut down into slices and you say, oh, well, this is dead. It is not dead. Changing form, yes. The same as you do when you decease the body and you leave it behind. Even the body, for a time, still vibrates after you leave it. Same with the tree, same with the wood. May change form, but it is still alive. So when you put the rear, give thanks that first of all, there's something there to hold you. And secondly, to the vibration of the wood that is still alive and you can speak to it. Try that in one of your meditations. I know that some of you have, in speaking to that which would be called dead. Not dead wood, still alive in another form. So, into a family that was already open to spirituality and knowing that there was much to be understood and praised. Many of the songs that were sung were in praise of life and life in all of its forms. So as a small child, I was nurtured in that osmosis, if you will call it, of knowing the vibration of life and with a very loving mother who was happy to have me and a father who was, like a lot of fathers, in awe of what had come forth and very loving. So the family, my first encounter with the physicality of life in that lifetime. Now I'll digress just a wee bit and to say that is not the only lifetime that I had. It is written in your holy works that that was the one and only lifetime and I am the one and only Christ and to be worshiped as something, someone way above you, unreachable, but you can pray to me. I am right here in your midst. I am alive. Same as you are. Same as you will be when you decease the body and leave it behind. You will be surprised. You have tried this before. But you are still alive. And there will be, for you especially, because you have made a lifetime now of being open to ideas and spirituality, you will not be in a place of questioning what is happening, but you will go easily into knowing, I am still alive. Well, yes, always and forever, you will go forth experimenting, playing, enjoying, being in joy. Yes. So from the very earliest, I had a certain ambiance in which to grow. And I knew from the Essene teachings that life is ongoing and that life is in many different forms. And I know that what may look to be deceased is truly, the spirit is still there and to be called upon. There is a story that is told of me when I was a boy, and I was with a couple of playmates, and we found a bird by the side of the road, and it seemed to be deceased. But I knew that the life force can always be called upon if it is in agreement. So I picked up the bird and I held it in my hand. And the warmth of my hand and the knowing that life is forever allowed the bird to make choice. Every living thing has choice. That which may seem to be dead still has choice. So I held the bird, and the warmth of my hands activated some of the life force, and it stirred a little bit, moved a wing. And my playmates were surprised because this was obviously a dead bird, something to be kicked at and left for the pickings of whatever animal came along and wanted bird meat. And now this one was fluttering its wings. And in a moment, it took off and flew away. So my playmates wondered what happened. And they decided, as wise men always do, even if they are this tall, only this tall, wise men always know best. They decided, well, the bird obviously was just dazed and had not actually deceased. Therefore, it came to and flew away. And I let them have their decision. But there were ones who wondered, because the bird really looked like it was dead. Okay. You have done this yourself, where you have picked up perhaps a snail, something that looked like it was on the driveway and was gone, and you have held it, and then you have felt something, a life energy still there. All of you have known life ongoing, as yours is, as some of your relatives have surprised you. You thought that that one was at the door of death, and then they rallied at least long enough to be able to say goodbye to you, if that was their wish. Or they rallied enough that the doctors were surprised and said, well, it's a miracle, but Aunt so-and-so is still with you. It happens. And you have known ones who have done this. Life has been called a mystery, and it is, because life is ongoing as long as you want to activate the body. You have this kind of life. After you decide that, okay, I've had enough of this body and how it has served me well, but it's getting kind of worn out, so you say. You have known this, you have done this. Life is you. You are life in different forms, different times, different choices. But you are the ongoingness of spirit, sometimes taking form, other times not. So I grew, as they say, there was a wonderful quote, in wisdom and in stature. In other words, I got taller and I got wiser. At least it appeared that way. To the visit to the temple, that is very well known, where there were things said, and I questioned. I said, that is not true. When some of the tall ones who were wiser, supposedly, and gave forth a message, and said thus and so, and that's how it has to be, And I said, but why? Life is ongoing. I knew, not only because of the bird experience, but other experiences like that. So I questioned the veracity. One is not supposed to question the veracity of one's elders. I found out. Because you see, when I questioned my mother and father and the ones of the Essene community, they explained, they had patience. They said, well, this is how it is seen. This is what was told to me, etc. But in the temple, where the wise ones, the holy ones, the learned ones, hung out, what they said was not to be questioned. And here I was, not quite a man grown yet, and I had questions. I asked, which you will understand in this day and time, why do the women sit on one side and why do the men sit on another side? They walked in the door together. Why are they separate? Well, it's because men are holier. Men are closer to God. Men have a mind that understands the Holy Scriptures. Women take care of the men. Well, sure, women do that, and everything else as well. That's what the women sitting on the other side said, quietly. Yes. So I questioned, which was frowned upon, but I had many questions, as you do, from time to time. You read, you study, you ask questions of other ones. Have you ever thought about, and this comes up when you are in a group such as this, you are free to ask, have you had an experience like, and you describe what you have experienced, and the other one says, yes, something like that, and then they tell you their story. So there is much of richness in the friends that you draw to yourself. So it was thought, as I grew a little bit older and taller, that I should make trek to a place called India, where it was rumored that many wise men lived, and I would go and study with the wise men in India. So part of my learning came in the journey of how does one get up on a camel? Now, camels you have seen, at least pictures of them, and you've probably seen one in your collection of animals called the zoo. Yes, in a compound such as that. So I looked at the camel, and the camel was... Now, I was, in that lifetime, I was over 6 foot tall. I was not a small shrimp. I was not a small person. But the camel was taller than I. And how does one get up on a camel? Well, I tried tugging on the reins to have it come down. But that didn't work. In fact, it only made it a little bit irritated. Why does this human keep pulling on this? And it hurts. Well, okay. So I thought, well, that's not going to work. I wonder if I smack it on the rear, if it might put its rear down. I tried that. I got a hoof in the stomach. That was not looked upon favorably. I tried cajoling. I tried reasoning. You ever try reasoning with a camel? They have a reputation, and it is true. They are most obstinate, or at least can be. So I gave up, and I prayed to the Father, how do I get the message across? How? And I'm speaking out loud because I think I'm talking to my father, the Holy Father. How do I get the camel to kneel? In my mind comes the answer. Just ask. So I thought, well, I'm sure we don't speak the same language, but I'll try. And so I said to the camel, beloved camel, I would like to be upon your back. Would you please come down to my size so that I can climb on your back? And the camel, in essence, said, well, why didn't you just ask? Of course. And it came down. The journey to India taught me much. First of all, how to get up on a camel. Secondly, how to ride a camel. Now, camels are not especially comfy. They're pretty bony, and I was not what you would call fleshy, fat. So we had a little bit of accommodation that had to be made, and there was a bit of accommodation that the camel made, and there was a lot of accommodation that my rear made to make the journey. Now, the journey was not a one-day thing, and those of you who have traveled to get here know how long a journey can feel as you make trek yourself. You know, it took you a while driving up, and there you had at least something to sit on that felt, hopefully, a little softer. But there was accommodation that was made, and the camel and I learned how to communicate in love. I realized that I could not make him do anything, and he realized that I valued him. So we reached a good understanding. Now, the trek from Nazareth to India is a long one, and there was much that I learned on that journey of communication, first of all. Secondly, communication with the other ones in the camel train, because I was not just solitary making this trek. It was a whole train of camels. And some of the camels were more hospitable than others. And I learned that mine actually was quite friendly after we got over the initial language barrier. But some of them did not like the way they were being treated, and the handlers did not always understand the camel's language. So sometimes there was a bit of the hostility that happened. And I did share with them my story, hoping that perhaps they would learn something from it. But they had been camel traders much longer than this lad had been living. Therefore, that which I would share didn't go very far. When I arrived in India, there was, as you have in this day and time, a communication network. And there was a, what would you call it, a gathering place, a school, where I would be housed and have training in various studies. Now, I had studied with the Essenes, and I did a lot of what was the approved methodology of copying the old ancient scripts of history and philosophy, and also knowing spirituality, the fact that there is no difference in any form of life. In other words, every form of life is life. So there was much, I suppose you would call it metaphysics in this day and time. True? It would be metaphysics? Okay. So I had a basis, but these were teachings more advanced from very, very ancient writings, philosophers, who were known to the Essenes, their writings were, But some of the teachings were not in what you would call the common parlance of being able to be understood easily. So I spent several years there studying, and a wide range of the curriculum of history, history of spirituality, what was believed in other centuries, what was being handed down in medicinal knowledge, and with some of the arts, music, music. There were other students there at the same time, and there was a most beautiful young maiden who was studying at about the same level that I was, and she had the most beautiful musical training of voice and of playing the, what do you call the pipe that has the various holes in it? The flute, right. She could play that to the place where your heart would vibrate with the musical notes. And I fell in love. I thought this was an angel. And she was, and is. And we had much to share with each other, because she had come from a different background, although there were, as we discovered, ancestors in common, if you would trace it back a ways. And it was a wonderful friendship that we had. But because I came from a different country, and because she was somewhat younger than I, she was going to be studying there longer, and it was time for me to return back to home, what was known to be home. And so I left, full of wonder. All of the studies that I had done in the years that I spent there, 6 years, post-grad, as you would call it. And I came back to my village to share that which I had learned from abroad. But the villagers didn't want to hear it. They said, Yeshua, we know all that. We know enough that we are in concert with our ancestors. We have the parchments. We have the writing. What more would we want? And I said, but there is more. I can share with you. No. You are Joe and Mary's son. We have known you from the time you were born, growing up. Wondrous things you have done, yes. But that is okay. So, what was I to do? I was full, as you get to be when you're so enthusiastic, so full of Theos, God, that you want to share it, as you will be at the end of this week and you go back to wherever home is, and you're going to want to open your heart and share with others. And they're in a different space, as you call it. And they think, well, that's fine that you had a special week, but... So, I talked to the shepherds, who were happy to talk with me because they had the sheep and nature, a few trees perhaps, but not much of the human companionship. And so the shepherds were my first pupils, you would say, the first ones who wanted to know more. They were wise in the way of nature because they studied the heavens and they knew the seasons. And there was much that they could share with me that was not in a book or on the scrolls. And I made friends with the shepherds and spent time with them. And I traveled the countryside talking with the simple people who wanted to know why about various things, and wanted to know what My grandfather said to me, what did he mean when he said, and they would quote something that the grandfather had said, and I would explain whatever he had been referring to. And they were happy to have the extra information. And by, as time goes on, word spread that I was talking about something that was a scene, and yet beyond that, I was talking about something that was down to earth, human understanding, and yet more than human understanding. So I began to have a few friends who traveled with me, because I didn't stay with the shepherds too long. I mean, for a while, but then I moved on. And after a while, as I joke, I had good press. In other words, I was well recommended that I should probably know something. And so more and more of you came to walk with me. And I was happy to share what I knew from my heart, from my studies, from just living on my own with the sheep. You can learn a lot from sheep. Yes, from any animal. As those of you know, even in this week, you have a couple of the four-footed ones here, and there are many of you in the grouping who have four-footed ones. And they teach you, if you are willing to learn, they teach you their language, the language of love. And they will come up to you and they will want to give you love and they want to be touched, petted, you call, because they are your pets. In truth, they are your masters. And you know that well because they will come and remind you when it is dinner time. Yes. So after a while, I had quite a grouping that was following me. And I knew that which we will be and are and have been talking about in this week and in other times previous about reality with the lowercase r and reality with the capital R, and how you fashion your reality, lowercase r, out of the reality that you are, capital R. And I did various things that they understood to be miracles. They called them miracles because they didn't quite grasp you create your reality, lowercase r, moment by moment because of the reality that you are. You have that power to create. You are creating this evening. You are creating the ideas that you are taking in. You are creating the sound that you think you are hearing. You are creating this reality, a shared reality, in this time. Let that sink in for a moment. So after a while, there were certain demonstrations that I made that seemed to be miracles. There were healings that truly I did not do, but ones because of the good press that I had and because of the suggestions, ones felt themselves to be healed, knew that they could be healed. Anything that you create, take this to heart, anything that you create, you can heal. So if you have a sore on the leg, if you have something internal that is bothering a bit, you have created it. Not as a judgment, not as a negative, but you have created it. And if you have created it, you can change it. You can make it whole again, healed. So ones came and followed me because they perhaps understood intellectually what I was saying, but it hadn't come to the place of the heart of really knowing it. And so they traveled with me in hope. And for some of them, that hope paid off. After a while, it was like, oh, that's what he's been saying. Well, why didn't you say so? Okay, I did. So miracles, seemingly, happened. And as I said, you know, the press was very good to me, and the miracles were reported. But not everyone who came to me and said that they wanted to be healed accepted the healing that is their birthright. And some went away sorrowful, and others went away joyfully because they believed. They knew it could happen. Your medical practitioners in this day and time, they do know healing. They make suggestions. And you believe in the little white pills or the longer capsules or the liquid that you drink or the diet that you go on. You believe that is going to heal you. That in truth does not heal you, but your belief heals you. You go to the expert who has a certificate up on the wall that says he knows or she knows, and they have a certain aura about them, a certain way of speaking to you that allows you to have trust that, yes, they must know what they're talking about. And so you take whatever their advice is, and you believe that is going to heal you, and in 2 weeks, you are healed, or longer, or shorter, whatever your belief dictates. But who is the healer? You are. You believe that it can happen. You believe that they can help you with it. You believe that the little white tablet, I take this for 6 days, and on the seventh, I'm healed. And by gum, it works. And you go and you tell a friend and you say, and they say, oh, I've got a sore throat or I've got whatever. And you say, oh, I know exactly what will heal it. Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't for the other one, depending on their belief in your word and how they see it has happened, your healing. Not really understanding that you manifest that which you believe. So, and it is not down-putting if you try something and your belief is not quite in conjunction with what you're hoping for and the healing doesn't immediately happen. That is not to say that you failed. It means it's one thing, one more thing that you've tried that perhaps brought you a little bit closer to healing because you are believing that there could be healing. That is the basis, the bottom foundation that you have to have first, that you believe that the healing can happen. So give yourself top marks for believing that healing can happen. It's got to start there. If you don't believe that healing can happen, it's not going to happen. It all comes back to belief. But do not give yourself the failing grade if it doesn't happen right away. Sometimes it takes even another lifetime before the belief settles in. Be easy on yourself. Part of the reason that you manifest what seems to be non-healing is because you don't have the knowing of how powerful you are. So, stop. Affirm. I am. That's a good one to affirm right there. And then you can go on to say, I am healed. Or if you want, you can say, I am in the process of healing. But don't say it for too long. Well, I mean, that's up to you, actually. You can keep saying that for lifetimes if you want to, but I would recommend that you put an end to how much time you're going to spend in that space. So, I gathered a good following. And this was a very learning experiment. Because if you have, say you have a grouping of 50 people, that's a good crowd. Say if you have a grouping of 200 people, that covers the hillside very well. What if you have a gathering of 500 and the ones in the front row have to turn around and say it to the next row and the next row and the next row and the next row, because I had a very strong voice and it carried far and wide, but it didn't carry to the top of the mountain. So we had the relay messages, and some of the messages did not always get relayed quite the same as when I had spoken. We had some experimentation that was most interesting, because you see, there was the belief that what I said would heal. So even if the words were saying something backwards, there was still the belief that it would be the healing modality. So sometimes it worked, and they said, "It's a miracle." And I said to myself, "Yes, it is a miracle, because I have told you this over and over and over, and now you have accepted it. That's the miracle." But it was a very companionable life up to that point. The girl that I had met in India, she came to be part of the grouping that followed me. Many of you, especially the women in this day and time now who want to claim it, were with me helping with the logistics of feeding 500, 200, 100 people, getting them to share the bread that they carried in the pockets of the robes, getting them to, as in this day and time where you had the us and the them, and I don't associate with, and I'm not going to give my bread to this one. And then a miracle happens, and the bread is shared openly. Those were the miracles that happened. In this day and time, you are seeing a repeat. And that is going to come to an end, a healing end. But not before you don't feel a few of the rocks in the journey. But it does not have to be many rocks. You can reach the sharing sooner rather than later. Free choice. So, what I was sharing was what I had learned from the Essene teachings, what I had learned from my Indian philosophers, from all of the writings and the histories that I had read. I was what you would call the voracious reader. Anything that I could get my hands on to read that would give me a little piece of knowledge, open a window, maybe a crack, just a bit, anything that I could find out. When I was growing as a lad, I had the reputation for asking questions, always asking questions, and I never stopped asking questions. The same as you, wondering, how does this fit together? Why does this happen? Will it happen again? If it happened twice out of three times, will it happen the third time? Yes, you see, I was eavesdropping. Yes, I do that from time to time. So I came to a place where my press was loud enough that I came to the attention of the learned ones. And the holy ones, the learned ones, did not like what I was teaching, because it opened some doors and windows that they either didn't know were there or didn't want to know that there could be something more than what they had read and studied. So they sent out a messenger and said to me that maybe I should cool it a bit. After all, if you have 500 people camping out on a hillside, And then you move on to the nearest town. The hillside looks like there's been a big grouping of people having a picnic. And even though the women in the group and some of the men would deign to pick up a bit of the litter, the hillside showed it. And some of the, in that day and time, the townsfolk didn't like what they saw. And the holy ones didn't like what I was teaching. It was too far off of what they had been taught. And what they had been taught was this. And that's as far as truth goes. And I was doing this, opening the blinders and saying, what about? Okay. I was a rabble rouser. I was stirring up questions and they didn't have the answers. So they said, Yeshua, cool it. And I said, but if I cool it, the very rocks are going to be crying out with the truth. You cannot keep the truth from the ones who really want to know it. They didn't like that either. So you have your story of the crucifixion. They really wanted to silence me and have me just close up shop and go back to carpentry, which was the trade that I knew. But I had another trade that didn't deal in money, but it dealt in eternal life. And that I wanted to share and could not stop because it was right there in front of everyone. It was right there, as plain as the nose on your face, I said. Well, I said it in different terms, but okay. So they suggested that perhaps a thief, one who had been caught stealing, because he was stealing for his family to feed his family, which is something that you would do, anyone with a heart would do. But he was caught. And they said, well, what about Barabbas? What about someone else? Let this one go. He's just talking fairy tales. Let him go. But the holy ones didn't want to let me go because I was stirring up questions and giving answers, and they didn't like the answers. So we came to the judgment of the crucifixion. Now, something that you may have heard of, and there are studies that are being done in this day and time. When I was in India, I was taught how to raise my consciousness out and above the body so that I did not feel pain. Now, the first time you try doing that, it's like, ah, what am I doing? But as you will allow the consciousness to be raised and deny any semblance of something other than the true essence of yourself. In other words, focusing upon the energy that you are, the divine creative energy that is creating your reality as you're going along, okay? You focus on that and you take that focus off of the body, so that you are able to hold out the arm and take a great spike and put it through the arm and not feel a thing. We practice that. Now, the first time you do it, it's like, ah, what am I doing? Bad enough if you pinch your finger somewhere. It's like, oh, well, we studied, we practiced. As I said, it doesn't happen on the first try or the second try or the 10th or 12th. It takes a bit of practice of raising the awareness, the consciousness, from the body. Now, you have been taught from the time you were born to pay attention to the body. When it is in pain, you attend to it to try to take care of the pain. Anywhere it is in the body, to take care of it. That is the message of the body. But you as the spirit that you are, you as the wisdom that you are, can change that by taking the focus off of the body and putting it somewhere else. And where you put it is, for me, it was above, into the reality of the Father that I am. So there were many days of practice of I am. We started out with a negative in the beginning, I am not the body. And then it became the positive, I am the Father in expression, going above the body. Now, as I have said, it took some time to recognize this and to be able to hold it. But you have ones in this day and time who can show you this very thing. You have what is called your video. There is a video extant that you can find where there is one demonstrating this, where he takes this long spike, about that long, 6-8 inches perhaps, and holds out his arm and puts it through the arm with no feeling in the arm, no expression of pain on his face, no outcry of, ah, nothing, because he has raised his awareness, his consciousness, above and beyond the physical body. It can be done. And it was taught in India when I was there. So ones of your religious orders have made great story of how I suffered on the cross. The only suffering I did on the cross was the feeling that I wanted to teach more. I wanted more time to be amongst you in a way that you could understand and I could teach you and share with you that which I had practiced and knew to be a truth, capital T. That was the only suffering that I did. And yet I knew that each and every brother and sister has free choice, free will, and that in time you would know the truth that I knew. So at that point, all responsibility went off the shoulders. I did not have to save you. In truth, hear this well, wake up. In truth, I can save no one. But if you will follow my example, you can save yourself from a lot of worry and pain, etc. But sometimes, as I had to come to understand, sometimes you enjoy a bit of the suffering. You have had relatives, oh, how I suffer. And they get the pats on the back and the hugs because they suffer so much. Okay, to each his own. Now, did I stay on the cross? Of course not. Did I decease the body? Yes. Did I activate the body again later? Yes. Do I walk amongst you? Sometimes activating a body? That blows the mind, but yes. There are times when I walk down the path and pass you, and there is a knowing that you feel. I may not look like the portrayal of me. There's a portrayal. Okay. Yeah, good-looking guy. Not bad. You can assume any bodily form that you want to. How? By knowing that you can do it. Knowing, not hoping, not saying, oh, I think that would be a great idea, but actually knowing that, yes, if I want to go down this pathway as a crocodile, I can do it. Now, who would want to do that? I don't know. But these ideas and examples come to me that are kind of far-fetched. Well. Yes. But when you look at the human body, why did we design it the way we have? Seems to work pretty well. Not perfectly, but not too bad. But I digress. I am with you always. I have been with you always. For there is no separation. Very good. If you remember nothing from this week, and you are going to remember much, but if you remember nothing, you will remember that there is no separation. There is only one of us, appearing as the many. Miracle that that is. You see, you are miracle workers. That is my story. It is your story as well. Because everything I have said to you in this evening is possible for you to do if it serves a purpose. In other words, you are not going to want to do it just on a whim. Whims go out really fast, especially when you get to doing things like the spike through the arm. That whim goes out very fast. Walk as the Christ. Love as the Christ. Hug as the Christ. Smile as the Christ. And live every day as the Christ that you are. So be it.